We'll do prayer in a moment. Again, this is sort of a new order of worship for us, so I'm a little out of sync myself. But if you have prayer requests, you can take some time between now and the end of this sermon to fill out those requests in the pew card. So, lots of walking and journeying in our gospel. And in this story in particular, this is just almost, would it be appropriate to say it's an iconic story, right? I just passed around an icon. This is an iconic story in the gospel, a resurrection appearance. And it reminds me of this phrase, somebody is Evelyn Underhill, described the Christian contemplative journey as a long, loving look at the real. Think about that. The Christian journey of faith is a long, loving look at the real. So I'm going to unpack that, and I'm going to unpack the four words. The long, it's loving, it's a look, eyes to see, eyes opened, eyes blocked, shielded, whatever. A long, loving look at the real. And I may not necessarily do them in that order, but I do want to start with the long, because the journey is long sometimes, right? There are no shortcuts. That may not sound like good news, but it is. And to say that the journey is long may sound like bad news, but it doesn't have to if you hear it right, right? It's all in how we hear it. So it's a long, loving look at the real. There are no quick fixes, that means, and the shortcuts usually don't amount to much. So I take comfort in that. I know I'm in it for the long haul. Sometimes I just remind myself. It's long. Martin Luther King Jr. had that wonderful phrase about social justice. The arc of justice is long, and it bends towards peace. He said something to that effect. When we think in short terms and, you know, presidents come and go and administrations come and go and laws come and go and we think there's justice, then there's not justice. Martin Luther King Jr. was in it for the long haul, and he said the arc of justice in the universe is long. And it bends towards justice. I think what he said was the moral arc is long and it bends towards justice, something like that. So it's long. So that's actually good news, right? That the journey we're on is long. I was cracking up when we were singing because I made myself laugh. There's a line in the song that says there's an anchor for my faith. And for some reason I saw the word armchair. I don't think I sang armchair, but I saw the word armchair. There's an armchair for my faith. That would be a whole other sermon, wouldn't it? I'm going to sit back and relax. The journey, though, is interesting, right? I'm told, and I think if you look at the geography of this, what happens in this passage, these disciples are walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus, and I'm told it's about 17 miles. Think about that. Do you do that in a day? You don't. Christine might walk or run the Des Moines half marathon. That's 13 miles. I know Barb Menier walks it she's done it many times. To do that, she trains for months to walk 13 miles. For us, that's an event, right? That's a life event. To say, I walked the Des Moines half marathon. You get sponsors and you raise money and it's kind of a thing. But for them, it was Tuesday, right? That's what you do on Tuesday or Sunday. In this case, it was Sunday. You walk 17 miles. And they actually, when I read the second half of the story, they did it twice. Because what happens after they break the bread was so astonishing to them, they went back to Jerusalem that night to tell the rest of the disciples. Yeah, what is that? 34 miles? Yeah. That's how they moved, right? Again, for us, a 17-mile trip is just a commute. I go farther than that when I go to Mitchellville. I go 20-something miles. And it's just that's just what you do. But so it's just to give you an idea, a context, that when we talk about the journey of faith being long, that's not bad news. I think it's good news. It doesn't have to be tedious. It doesn't have to be frustrating. It just is what it is, right? There are no shortcuts. I'm going to walk the whole thing, right? And that the journey is a long, loving look at the real. I think that's an important, you could leave that word out, couldn't you? You could say the Christian faith is a long look at the real. That almost sounds scientific. It's objective. It's removed. It's just a long, careful look at the real. A long, accurate look at the real. A long, perceptive look at the real. But to say that it's a long, loving look at the real just changes the very flavor, the very essence of it for me. I don't know if you can hear that, right? And for me, again, this is good news. This is why it's the gospel. This is why I'm preaching it, right? This is good news to know that when I look at the real in my life, when I look for the signs of God around me, when I walk this long path that takes bends and curves, I can do it lovingly. There's self-compassion in that walk, so I don't have to judge myself. Well, you really screwed up that time. You really tripped over that rock. You know, I mean, I have, as I look back on my long, loving look at my long, loving look at the real, there are lots of stumbles and there are lots of mistakes. But the fact that I can take a long, loving look means that I'm seeing it through God's eyes of compassion. And that's good news. And this, I think, is the crux of it. A long, loving look at the real. A long, loving look at the real. It's implied in that that not everything we look at is real, right? We have new language for that this year with fake news, right? We have fake news. It's true, we do. I mean, there's what's funny to me, it's almost comical when I turned on CBS and they had a news story about fake news, and I thought, you don't even get the irony of that, do you? I mean, I'm supposed to listen to you tell me what's real and fake when I think the news for a long time has been an entertainment industry that just puts pictures and images up in front of us. Is it real? Most of it isn't. When we talk about this long, loving look of the real that our faith journey is, we're really called to discern what's real and what's not. We had a vision statement, a church I served in Indianola. I really liked this. I just loved this vision statement. Our vision statement was being real, becoming Christ-centered. Right? Being real, becoming Christ-centered. It just speaks so much to me about what the church is called, who the church is called to be. If we can't be real in church with one another, then what's the point? You know, and I had friends that used to say there's more real church happening in the church basement at the AA meeting that happens there on a Sunday night than it happens on Sunday morning. Because in an AA meeting, people generally tend to be pretty raw and real. Can we be that real upstairs on Sunday morning or on Thursday morning or whenever we gather? Can we be real? The other thing about this, I just love, you remember the phrase, it kind of, you know, oh, get real. Get real. Are you for real right now? Someone might say to you. Are you, in other words, are you kidding me? Or are you for real? Or get real. And it reminds me, you can't get real. You have to be real, right? This I'm borrowing from Richard Rohr about the faith journey. He says, you can't get there. You have to just be there. I think we could say that about Emmaus. You can't get to Emmaus. I might have told you exactly the road they were on. It's exactly 17 miles from Jerusalem. I could draw you a map. But the real Emmaus, where our eyes are opened and we see the risen Christ, that's not a place you can get to. Follow the directions, follow these rules, do these steps. You can't get there. It's a way of being. You can't get there. You have to be there. This is a truth, I think, that I understand about my faith journey. It's a long, living look at the real. So yeah, there's even a moment on the road when this stranger comes, and they almost are like, are you for real? Are you the only stranger? You don't know. I mean, it's almost that moment of reality check that they have to do with this guy. So here's another piece. I'm reading this with different eyes today. I was talking about Sunday school. I was on a retreat for a couple of days this week. What I didn't say is I really had the joy of reconnecting with an old friend, a UCC pastor. I haven't seen him in almost 20 years. And he was telling me about his take on Easter this year. And I alluded to this last week. You know all these resurrection stories where they don't recognize Jesus. There's resurrection appearances, and there's always a failure of recognition. So he said, my friend Steve Miller, this pastor, he said, you know the story when Mary sees Jesus and thinks he's the gardener. Steve says, I don't think that was Jesus. I think it was the gardener, right? But what resurrection means is she saw Jesus in the face of another human being. That's when resurrection happens. When you look at the gardener or the stranger on the road to Emmaus and all of a sudden you see the face of Jesus, isn't that what resurrection is about? It kind of gave me chills when I thought about that. And then I think about the Emmaus story. What if the fact that they didn't recognize who he was because it wasn't the actual Jesus? What if it's the Christ that's in all of us that all of a sudden became recognizable? What if the guy on the road was this stranger, and when it says he opened up the scriptures to him, maybe it just means that it was somebody who has been through the scriptures enough that he recognized himself. You know what? That's me in that story, and this is me in this story. Don't we do that? I do that. That's what I'm trying to do today. I'm trying to see where I am in this story. Maybe he went through the scriptures and pointed out all the places where he saw himself. They still didn't know who he was at that point. It's like, well, this guy's interesting, right? He sees himself in all the Bible stories. I've never thought about that. Maybe he's showing them a way. Reminds me, there was a rabbinic story where the student of the Torah came to his teacher and said, I've read the entire Torah. I've been through it. He says, well, go read it again. So he goes back and he reads the whole Torah. He says, I've been through the whole Torah. And his teacher says, yes, but has the Torah been through you? Right? That's the purpose of going back and reading the Torah. Not so that you can go through the Torah, but so that God's word can work its way through you. So I see this stranger on the road to Emmaus going through the Torah. And apparently, at some point in his life, the Torah has been through him because he opens it and he sees himself in all these places. And that's when resurrection happens. If we do that, if we look at one another and see the face of Christ, then we're living in resurrection faith, right? I think that's what that's about. So the story does go on. I just want to end with that. The lectionary calls for the whole thing. I didn't want to make Donna read all, whatever it is, 30 verses. So I'll pick up and read the last 10. As they came near the village to which they were going, which is Emmaus, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over. It's hospitality, right? That's what people did in the world at that time. So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, were not our hearts burning within us? Now all of a sudden it makes sense. Right now, all of a sudden, they said to each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us? That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, the Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon. And then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. He had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. And just real quickly, it touches back to last week, because in last week's sermon and story in the gospel, it was about the wounds of Christ, and he showed his wounds, and in that, they recognized who he was. And I think when we take a long, loving look at the real, we also see our brokenness, right? And it's when he breaks the bread, he took, he blessed, he broke, he gave, those four verbs that Jesus did. And it's in that, maybe it's through the brokenness, that we see the truth. Maybe it's through our own brokenness that we discover Christ in us, and our eyes are opened, and we look at another person, and we see the very face of Christ. This is the good news of the gospel. Thanks be to God.